As we've been studying recently about those nations of Israel and Edom, the roots of the conflict that existed between them and why the Lord loved Israel and hated Esau, that is the nation of Edom that descended from Esau, the brother of Jacob. We recently were looking at the circumstances that started the division between them when Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, and then Jacob took Esau's blessing. And of course, all of that was in accordance with the choice the Lord had made to fulfill the promises that he had given to Abraham and to Isaac, that would be fulfilled through Jacob and his descendants and not through Esau. And as we noted, that did not in any way hinder or prevent Esau from choosing to serve the Lord, to be righteous and to be saved, but it was God's choice and his plan to fulfill his blessings through Jacob and his descendants. We went through last time and looked at all of the scriptures that showed the great blessing that was given to the children of Israel in the land of Canaan, and what a good land that was that God gave to them. And in contrast, that very dry, rocky land that was given for an inheritance to the Edomites. Inheritances that they were given did not compare at all. Now, we do know, of course, that the Edomites possessed that inheritance in Mount Seir long before the Israelites entered into the land of Canaan. And as we continue our study tonight, we see another situation as these are now two distinct, separate nations. This is really the first time we see an encounter between the children of Israel as a nation and the Edomites as a nation. So before we looked at the roots of the enmity that would be there, the bitterness on the part of the Edomites towards the children of Israel, going back to the two brothers, the fathers of the nations. But now we see in Numbers chapter 20 an encounter between the two nations, the first that we have recorded. After the Israelites had been wandering in the wilderness now for 40 years, they're being directed now to ascend up from the wilderness to the east side of the Jordan River, where they're going to conquer that land on the east side of the Jordan, which they did from Sihon and Og, those two Amorite kings that were there. But before they got there, they had to pass through that area to the south to reach that region there on the east side of the Jordan River. And so that's the situation. The Israelites coming up out of the wilderness, heading towards their inheritance as they're about to begin to conquer and take that inheritance that was far superior to that which the Edomites had, though they already possessed theirs. And so the Israelites came through, and naturally by the course that they were taking, came into proximity to where the Edomites were. And so in Numbers chapter 20, we begin reading in verse 14, it says, "And Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. Thus saith thy brother Israel." And so he's beginning with these words, highlighting the fact that they are brethren. They are the father of the nation of the Israelites was the twin brother of the father of the Edomites. So he says, "Thus saith thy brother Israel, thou knowest all the travail that hath befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we have dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers, and when we cried unto the Lord, he heard our voice and sent an angel and hath brought us forth out of Egypt, and behold, we are in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost of thy border. Let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards, neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We will not turn to the right hand nor to the left until we have passed thy borders. And Edom said unto him, Thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. And the children of Israel said unto him, We will go by the highway, and if I and my cattle drink of thy water, then I will pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, Thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through the border, through his border. Wherefore Israel turned away from him. So this is the first time the two nations come into contact with each other as distinct nations, because Israel, I mean, the last time after Jacob and Edom, Esau had contact with each other. We know, of course, that Jacob's children, starting with Joseph, and then later his children, the fathers of the tribes of Israel, along with Jacob himself, ended up down in Egypt. And they sojourned there for 40 years, and that's where they multiplied and where the Lord made them to be in number that of a nation. But they were under bondage in Egypt, so they were not free, and they were not a nation by themselves yet until God freed them from that bondage. And, of course, with the Exodus, then the Lord numbered their years beginning with the Exodus from Egypt. They were now a distinct nation heading to their inheritance. They stumbled spiritually, as we know, and they were sentenced to a 40-year wandering in the wilderness. But now they're here, they are coming up to pass by Edom. Is this an unreasonable request that they're making? As he says, your brother, here we are. You know our hardship. We're coming up. We're just going to pass through. We're not going to stop by. We're not going to eat of your fields or vineyards. We'll pay you for any water that our cattle drink. We're just going by the road to get through. And they refused passage. I mean, why would they do that? Is there any favor or affection on the part of the Edomites to the Israelites? Clearly there is not. They won't even let them pass through without, when they're not going to be causing any damage or harm to them at all. So there's clearly a deep bitterness that is there. And it's not from anything that's happened as nations between the two, because this is their first contact. So what was the origin of why they would have these hard feelings and bitterness and be against the Israelites? Well, I think we know from what happened there between Jacob and Esau. But we can see how the Edomites very much despised the Israelites from the beginning as nations. And we're not going to see that ever change. Now, in Judges chapter 11, this situation comes up again. And lest we think that it's only in our modern times where people have tried to revise history or retell history in some way that is not at all according to what really happened when it gets revised. Well, that's not new to our time. We're going to see some revisionist history on display here in Judges chapter 11, verses 12 and 13. At this time when the Ammonites were vexing the children of Israel that were on the east side of the Jordan River, those tribes that had their possession there, and that was in close proximity to the Ammonites. And the Lord raised up Jephthah as the judge for those Israelites on that side of the Jordan River to deliver them from those Ammonites that were oppressing them. And so in verse 12 of Judges 11, Jephthah sent messengers unto the king of the children of Ammon, saying, What hast thou to do with me, that thou art come against me to fight in my land? Now let's look at the answer here. And we remember Proverbs 21:2 when he says, Every way of a man is right in his own eyes. People are very skillful at rationalizing anything and coming up with an excuse to justify their actions. Well, that's true of individuals. That's true of this king of the Ammonites and for the entire nation here. Let's look at their rationalization for why they felt justified to come up against Israel in their inheritance. Verse 13, it says, And the king of the children of Ammon answered unto the messengers of Jephthah, because Israel took away my land when they came up out of Egypt, from Arnon even unto Jabbok and unto Jordan. Now therefore restore those lands again peaceably. They're accusing Israel of possessing land that belonged to the children of Ammon. Now, when did the Israelites ever take of the inheritance of Ammon, Moab, or Edom? What did God tell them when they were coming through that area, when they were leaving the wilderness at that time, when they were refused passage there by the Edomites? What did God tell them explicitly about Edom and Moab and Ammon? The children of Esau and the children of Lot, those three nations. He explicitly forbade them from taking any of their inheritance. God gave them their inheritance, and Israel was not to take their inheritance, but those nations weren't to take of the inheritance that God gave to the children of Israel either, which is what Ammon is trying to do now. But they justify it by saying, oh, they're only taking back from Israel what Israel had wrongly taken from them. But when had Israel ever taken anything from Ammon? They had not. God forbade that, and they had never done that. So that was absolutely a lie, what he was telling concerning that accusation. So in verses 14 through 18, it says, "And Jephthah sent messengers again unto the king of the children of Ammon, and said unto him, Thus saith Jephthah, Israel took not away the land of Moab, nor the land of the children of Ammon. But when Israel came up from Egypt and walked through the wilderness unto the Red Sea and came to Kadesh, then Israel sent messengers unto the king of Edom, saying, Let me, I pray thee, pass through thy land. But the king of Edom would not hearken thereto. And in like manner they sent unto the king of Moab, but he would not consent. And Israel abode in Kadesh. And they went along through the wilderness and compassed the land of Edom and the land of Moab, and came by the east side of the land of Moab, and pitched on the other side of Arnon, but came not within the border of Moab, for Arnon was the border of Moab." So Jephthah is giving the true and accurate account of the history there, and how the Israelites had to go all the way around those lands because none of them would grant passage to them through their borders. So they had to go way around the east, to the east of Edom and Moab and Ammon, and come into the Amorites' territory on the east side of the Jordan River from that roundabout way, because they had been refused passage by the children of Edom and the children of Lot, those nations of Moab and Ammon. I mean, isn't that sad, going back to Abraham and all that he did, and taking care of his nephew Lot, who was himself a righteous man, and to see what has become of Lot's descendants? And of course we know how that came about too. That righteous man was the father of two very wicked nations. Now Esau himself, we saw that the Lord had said there were two manner of people in Rebekah's womb. Those were two nations and two different manner of people. The nation that came from Esau was not a righteous nation either, as Edom was very different in heart than his brother Jacob, as we already saw. The man that gave such little regard, thought nothing of that blessing that God gave him to be the firstborn of the twins, that birthright that came to him, and he sold it for a morsel of food. And so he lost that, and he lost the blessing. God had chosen Jacob for that reason, that and the elder was going to serve the younger, but because Jacob was of a different heart than Esau was. But the nation that came from Esau, the nation of Edom, was a wicked nation. Now let's go and look at a couple of passages where we see that description of the Edomites. We already saw the example there in Numbers 20 that was also brought up by Jephthah and recounted there in Judges 11. Psalm 83 verses 5 and 6, Psalm 83, 5 and 6 says, "For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee, the tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagararies." So he mentions those nations there, and Edom along with them, And what is he? How is he describing them? I mean, what kind of people are they? And he says that they were opposed in this. They were confederate against thee. He says, Edom was opposing God. So this was a wicked nation. The Edomites were, and also in Jeremiah 9 and verse 26, Jeremiah 9, 26, he says, Egypt and Judah and Edom and the children of Ammon and Moab and all that are in the utmost corners that dwell in the wilderness, for all these nations are uncircumcised and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in the heart. Now that's the other very sad part of this is as what became of the children of Israel. These were God's own people, but they forsook the Lord. And in their hearts, by the time we get to when Jeremiah was serving as God's prophet, how were the children of Israel compared to those other nations that the Lord describes as being uncircumcised in their hearts, not just physically, but so you have those nations that he mentions there in Jeremiah 9. But what is Israel compared to them? They had become like them. As he says, the house of Israel are uncircumcised in the heart. So they were going to be, they were subject to the Lord's wrath also, and the Lord was going to punish them for their own wickedness. But he was going to preserve a remnant and bring a remnant to repentance. Which is the very example that God used in the book of Malachi that we saw in the very first verses of the book of Malachi, that God gave as an example when the Israelites were saying after the, we get to within a couple of generations after the captives had returned to their land, where, that God had spared them and not utterly destroyed them like he had Edom and Moab and Ammon and these other nations around them. But God had preserved that remnant of the children of Israel and returned them to their land. And they said, God didn't love them. And he gave as an example, oh yes, I have, because I've saved you and preserved you, and here you are. He said, you want an example of someone I don't love? Esau, the Edomites. I utterly destroyed them. So there, that contrast was made there. But as far as how they were at that time and with under Jeremiah, these ones that were left there, the ones that were going to be preserved and brought to repentance, they were taken away and they were in Babylon. And that's Ezekiel was the one that was working with them, as difficult as that was. But the ones that were left in Jerusalem where Jeremiah was, how many of them were righteous? They weren't at all. And the Lord's pointing that out. So that's a very sad thing that so many of those Israelites, the vast majority of them, became wicked like those other nations. But he's certainly telling us what Edom was like, as he did in the Psalms. This persists. So the glimpse of Edom as we have, that we have as a nation back in the book of Numbers when Israel asked for passage through there, the glimpse that we have and the description of Edom as a nation there in the Psalms and then in Jeremiah's time. So that's spanning many hundreds of years from the time where the Israelites were had left Egypt all the way into the captivity. I mean, that's about a 1,000-year period of history that just between Numbers, Psalms, and Jeremiah. Do we see consistency over that 1,000-year period of history for Edom? They're wicked all the way through. So they were consistently so. Now, this was a reason why God did not approve of his people marrying of the Edomites. Now, if we looked at that, I mean, here's Jacob that God had chosen, and he has this twin brother, Esau. Shouldn't it be? I mean, these were both sons of Isaac and Rebekah. Shouldn't it be that that both these sons of those righteous parents would be righteous, and that their descendants would, being spiritually of the same kind, would marry each other, and they would be a righteous seed on the earth? I mean, that shouldn't it have been that way? Well, it should have been that way, but it wasn't, because as we see, the Edomites were wicked. So God did not approve of his people marrying the descendants of the very twin brother of Jacob himself, the father of their nation. And 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 and 2, this is where King Solomon got into trouble. 1 Kings 11, 1 and 2 says, "But King Solomon loved many strange women." That means foreign. That doesn't mean they were just weird. Strange is foreign. Just like we read outlandish women sometimes that he talks about. But that means literally they were outside the land. They were foreign. So these strange and outlandish women are talking about those that were from these foreign nations. So King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites. Now keep in mind the Hittites there too, but he says, "Of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love." The nation of Edom was an idolatrous nation. They were wicked. And God did not want his people to be intermarrying with them because of the spiritual difference between them. They would be corrupted by them. They would learn their ways, and then they would go after their idols. Well, what happened to Solomon when he violated what God said, even with all of his wisdom? A point that's made in the book of Nehemiah, when they started doing the same thing after the captives returned, and Solomon was brought up by Nehemiah as an example with all of his wisdom. If they were able to turn away that man's heart, what about the people there in Nehemiah's time that were engaging in that practice and marrying those strange and outlandish women? They didn't have the wisdom to withstand that for sure. They weren't as wise as Solomon. But we can see why God said for them not to marry those people in the Edomites. Well, if we start to wonder how Edom as a nation became wicked, well, we know Esau had his own problems. And part of that was manifest in whom he decided to marry. As we go back for a moment to the book of Genesis, chapter 26, verses 34 and 35. It says, "And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah." So here was a man that despised his own birthright. I mean, Esau himself had a string of very unwise, unrighteous decisions that he made in his life, from the selling of his birthright to now choosing these wives that he married that were of the Hittites. And remember, we read there in 1 Kings 11, those Hittites were mentioned there among those wicked nations that the Lord said he didn't want his people to marry. Well, was that a wise thing for Esau to marry those Hittite women in his time? No, and they were a grief of mind to Isaac and to Rebekah. Why? They weren't alike in heart. They were wicked in heart. So he married these women from those other nations, and they were of the world. So, and of course, it's the next chapter, Genesis 27, verse 46, brings this up again. The last verse of Genesis 27 says, "And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do to me?" And the very next, and so chapter 28 begins with Isaac calling Jacob and blessing him and charging him not to take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And he was sent to Padan Aram, to Laban's house, and that's where he found Laban's daughter. He loved Rachel, and of course, he was tricked into marrying her sister Leah first. But that's what Jacob did as far as seeking a wife. What had Isaac himself had done? What did Abraham do to find a wife for Isaac? Sent his servant to find Isaac a wife of their people there. That's where Rebekah came from. And so Laban was Rebekah's brother. Jacob is following that pattern. When Isaac sends him to do that, Jacob doesn't resist that at all. We can see the kind of heart that he had. And his desire was to find women that would be pleasing to the Lord, that would be righteous in heart. And so what Esau did was entirely the opposite. Of course, it also mentions there how Esau saw that that what Jacob did pleased, in verse 8, it says Esau, this is of chapter 28, Esau seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael and took unto the wives which he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife. Then later when it gives the genealogy of the children of Esau that we met, it mentions those women that were Esau's wives, where those descendants came from. Well, these Ishmaelites, these Hittites, daughters of Heth, what kind of people were they? And so what was the product of and their descendants? What were they like? We can understand how they became wicked. Esau made a very foolish decision with the wives that he married that became the mothers of his children, of descendants that were wicked like their mothers and foolish like their father. So that's how all of that started. So when the Lord said that he didn't want his people to marry the children of Esau, it's because Esau had married those women of the land of Canaan and that were wicked in heart. Now, we have some examples of some Edomites, some specific individual Edomites at various times in Israel's history that stand out. And we're going to see the wickedness being consistent there. One that we want to spend a few minutes on at this time. When we think of individual Edomites that come up in Israel's history, well, is there anyone that comes to mind first? There's one that should. Doeg the Edomite. That's what he was known as. And what did Doeg the Edomite do? He did something that none of Saul's servants of the children of Israel would be willing to do, even when the king commanded it, to slay the Lord's priests in the city of Nob. None of the Israelites that served the king would obey the king's commandment to kill the Lord's priests. But that gave no problem whatsoever to Doeg the Edomite. 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 1 through 10 says, "Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest." This is the background of what led to this. It says, "And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David." Why so? Because Saul was pursuing David's life. And if Ahimelech was concerned that if he helped David, then he would become Saul's enemy. Well, those concerns, that fear was not unfounded. So Ahimelech was afraid at the coming meeting of David and said unto him, why art thou alone and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, "The king hath commanded me a business, and it said to me, let no man know anything of the business whereunto I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." Now, as we might think at first glance, well, Saul's the king, and Saul certainly was not sending David here to do this. Saul wanted to kill David. So is David lying? Well, no, because who is really the king now in God's sight? It was in chapter 16 that God had Samuel anoint David king, when he had said in chapter 15 that day God was rejecting Saul as being king of Israel anymore. And then the very next chapter, 1 Samuel 16, Samuel anoints David to be king, and God takes his spirit away from Saul and sends an evil spirit to trouble Saul, and he gives his spirit to David. In the sight of God, David was, from that moment forward, he was the king of Israel. The fact that the rest of the nation took so long to recognize, to believe, and to act upon the faith of what God had determined, that David was their king, that delay, and it took a long time before they all accepted David as king, but what they were not willing to do, that they should have done at first, didn't change the fact that David was the king. So when he says, I'm on the king's business, the king has appointed me to do this, and the king has said to me this, well, who is he talking about? Well, himself. He knows he's king, so he's not lying at all. David is the actual king now in the sight of the Lord. So he answers Ahimelech that question. And the priest answered David and said, there is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women. And David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common. Yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there, but the show bread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. So this is the leftover bread from the Lord's altar. And so it says there that a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day. Now, this is an issue, by the way, that comes up some other, including by Christ himself. Jesus raised that question to the ones who were questioning him about that when they'd made their own rules about the Sabbath. And the Lord did not make man for the Sabbath, but Sabbath for man. And this showbread that was left over when David and his men had no other source of food, was it God's will for David and his men to die of hunger, to not eat this leftover showbread? Or was that something that was acceptable for David to eat? David knew, he understood, and he ate it, and he was guiltless, as Jesus himself pointed out to those Pharisees, just as Jesus was guiltless of violating the Sabbath when he healed the ones on the Sabbath, and when he and his disciples picked grain on the Sabbath for the strength of doing the Lord's work. I mean, whose business is David doing here? He's on the run from wicked Saul. David, a man after God's own heart, doing the will of God. So that issue is a settled one. But then after that, it says a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. And David said unto Ahimelech, and is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. It sure did. He had to get out of there to escape with his life from Saul. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take it, for there is no other save that here. And David said, there is none like that. Give it me. And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. So this was David on the run. But when he came to Ahimelech on that day, he was spotted by Doeg, the Edomite. And Doeg reports this to King Saul. So when Saul heard, and this is chapter 22 now, 1 Samuel 22, starting in verse 6. When Saul heard that David was discovered and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having the spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, hear now, you Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards, and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse? And there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as this day? Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahiatub and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahiatub." And he answered, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have you conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day?" Now, we see there's much falsehood in that accusation. It was true that he helped David, gave him the food and the sword, but not to rise up against Saul. David was running from Saul. And when we know when David had two opportunities to kill Saul with his hand, he refused to strike down the Lord's anointed. So that is a false accusation that they're helping David against Saul. That was not at all the case. Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, "And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding and is honorable in thine house? Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all of this, less or more." And the king said, "Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house." And the king said unto the footman that stood by him, "Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled, and did not show it to me." But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. And the king said to Doeg, "Turn thou, and fall upon the priests." And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear linen ephod. Doeg killed 85 of the priests of the Lord. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep, with the edge of the sword. Doeg slaughtered the whole town. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. And David said unto Abiathar, "I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life. But with me thou shalt be in safeguard." So that's what Doeg the Edomite did. And that fits in very well with what we see of the nation of Edom. One of their products, Doeg, did something, one of the most wicked deeds that is recorded in all of the Bible. We're out of time there, so we'll continue with our study, Lord willing, next Sunday night, and see some more about Edom, particularly the punishments that God brought upon them for their wickedness, as that stands as an example of the judgment of God against evil. But we'll continue with that, Lord willing, next time. This evening is an opportunity for you now, if you have not yet become a child of God. This is an opportunity you have to put on Christ, repenting and being baptized in his name for the remission of your sins, or to repent and return to him if that is your need this evening. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation at this time, please come now while we stand together and sing.